Wieland Presley and Van Hull Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Wieland Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Hull in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT.
In both Iowa and Illinois, more than one in every 10 people live in poverty. Is there an effective way to change that, to improve the numbers in the cities? Illinois has a commission whose main task is to end poverty, not reduce it, but eliminate it for children by the year 2031 and for adults by 2036. This month, Project Now will host its second Rooting Out Poverty Conference. It'll be held Thursday, April 18th, but what will it accomplish? The executive director of Project Now, the Reverend Dwight Ford, has joined us to explain. Rooting Out Poverty is marking its second year. Tell me about why this is being repeated another year.
Well, one of the things that we found about poverty is that it's so ambiguous for so many people. You ask 18 different people what poverty means, and you probably get 18 different answers. The history of poverty in America is longstanding. It is not something new. What we know about poverty is that it's persistent, it's problematic, it is entangled with gender, age, ability, race. All those things are a part of the ball of confusion at times when we work toward a solution in poverty. But although it's persistent, whether we're talking about individuals that are more blue in persuasion of politics or red in persuasion of politics, poverty still remains. And so what I am arguing, what our agency has pushed forward, is that we need a better set of solutions, a better set of questions. Why is poverty so persistent, and why does it remain at the levels it does or grow? Because the Quad City area is seeing a separation from those that have something or more and those that have very little or nothing. That gap is getting wider. And so we have to pay attention to the numbers. We have to ask ourselves a whole lot of questions that we don't ask. Albert Einstein's mother is said to have asked him every day he came home to school, Albert, what great questions did you ask? She didn't ask him what great answers did he provide. You get great answers, what better sets of questions? And right now, we're not asking ourselves the right questions, or our solutions would be much better.
You were asking the questions a year ago, and you're back at it this year. What was it from last year that made you say, this was successful, we need to continue this, we need to continue the discussions?
Well, the great thing about coming together in mass like that, you have a brain trust that is shared. Of course, conferencing is a reality in and of itself. Mm-hmm. It's not the feet on the street, the boots on the groundwork, but it does allow for ideation and dreaming and re-envisioning and reimagining, which we lack so much of. What continued this work for us is that right after the conference, we went right into policy matters. So for a whole year, we organized around five core areas: housing, healthcare, education, economics, and justice. And each one of those sessions, ranging from 60 to 80 people, each time we held them, would always have public elected officials at the table now. And not just to hear us do these wonderful presentations, they would have table time, and they were working through solutions with, guess who? Constituents. Most of the time, politicians are separate from the people they're making laws about. But now we have a chance to brainstorm together, to listen to each other, add to some facts and some ideas of what we can do alongside of each other. There are so many things people don't know that are hampering and hindering forward movement and upward mobility. And unless we are sitting at the table with each other, that doesn't get done. The conference produced that. We started with the idea, what changes poverty? Last year, we stay on those same things. More personal responsibility. Individuals that happen to be low income, we still ask that they do as much as they can for themselves. And that may be saying, I need help. No one's asking for low income, low wage, and low wealth earning families to be superhuman. That's not asked of anybody else on the planet. You don't have to be superhuman. You just have to be human. Make the best decisions you can with the resources you have at the time. That's what most of us do in America. Poverty is not something that is based on laziness. You can be a hardworking individual, industrious, savvy, and still be impoverished. That is America. And that is the irony. Poverty amid the plenty. And we got to figure this out.
And it is more, as you're underlining, more than just a public policy issue.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because government has a role, but you're saying it doesn't have the only role. But let's start with that. Where is government's role when it comes to either eliminating or reducing poverty?
Well, let's build the case for a better set of poverty. Personal responsibility. I ended with the idea of personal responsibility. Those of us who have experienced poverty or are impoverished now work as hard as we can and to try to figure this out. The other part of that personal responsibility is relationship-based. Personal responsibility is not only designated for the individual that is in poverty or the family. It is also designated for those of us. We have to do more of what we can do based on what we know about poverty. Our collective indifference, our social ignorance around poverty, where we label people as deficient in character, that they've missed a rung on the ladder for personal development because they're poor or have challenges meeting the income needs of their home, that stuff has to go. Dr. King reminds us constantly that we're wasting and degrading human life, clinging to old ways of thinking. Nothing about poverty cannot be solved in our lifetime. He said that then. The issue is we have to move from personal responsibility that is not only for the individual, but for others, move to public will. And public will then creates a better chance of greater public policy meeting its point. When are we as a community in the Quad Cities going to say the poverty at the level we have it is unacceptable? We have to own that. And whether you're a corporate, whether you are part of the faith community, whether we are part of the nonprofit, citizen sector organizations, whether we are in youth programs for children and young adults, colleges and universities, have to start saying this is unacceptable.
But you also know that there's a segment of the population that says, I made it.
Yeah.
Why can't you?
Sure.
Or, I'm fine. It's your problem.
Yeah, I wish it was that simple to say, it's your problem. We're inextricably bound in a network of mutuality. What affects one directly affects all of us indirectly. Anybody that knows what it means to be a part of a community or a neighborhood understands that when that car driven by a drunk driver runs into that light post, lights go out for all of us.
I think people may not even realize what poverty is.
Yes.
And we're talking that about 11 to almost 12% of our fellow Illinois residents, and it's the same percentage in Iowa, are considered not meeting the poverty line. But what does that really mean?
Well, everybody starts with poverty based off of the federal numbers. And so that's kind of like the entry point in. What are we talking about with dollars and cents? You start thinking about $15,060 for an individual. For a family of four, that's $31,200. That's it. That's the federal poverty line. My agency, we can serve up to 200% of the federal poverty line. That tells us more people are near poor or actually above the poverty line, but still impoverished. Because if I made $17,000 as an individual, am I not just as poor without the services or benefits or supports? If my family of four made $35,000, am I not just as poor? The $4,000 is not going to change the world. What we're saying is that we have to have a better metrics. That federal poverty level was designed back in 1963, and it hasn't had an overhaul since. And we still use those metrics. It doesn't take in consideration. It was set up basically off of three categories. One-third food should be your budget of the home. It came out of the USDA. Then you had one-third housing, and you already know that's shot through the roof based on housing. You could barely find an affordable rental property anywhere in the nation, not just in the Quad Cities. Then one-third living expenses. That model is blown to pieces. That's what I mean by asking a different set of questions. What will it take to restart this do differently. Right now, we're giving everything we can to try to keep pace. So the public policy aspect of it has a place. It's needed. When we saw individuals that were saying, I have a good heart, we shouldn't change anything towards civil rights. That legislation in 64 changed the world. Had that legislation not gone through and people were just trying to be nice where I can be nice, I can be helpful where I can be helpful, we'll be still in the same place where we were back in 64.
More than just good intentions.
It has much more than good intentions or individual effort.
As you know, back in 2020, the governor, Governor Pritzker, really brought up this a poverty task force, so to speak.
Absolutely.
In order to reduce poverty with the belief that almost like a moonshot goal of 2031 to end poverty for children, 2036 to end it for adults. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been a part of the solution for a number of years. Are you seeing progress? And is this type of a moonshot year that's put out there even realistic?
Well, we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, this idea that poverty is persistent and is problematic. Those of us that do this work have to believe, and there's enough evidence to suggest such, that poverty doesn't have to be permanent. So even on our goals to end homelessness in the state, we say functional zero. That means that whenever homelessness is experienced, that is brief, rare, and non-reoccurring. We can do the same thing with poverty. Brief, rare, and non-reoccurring. Long-term poverty is stifling. It's a thief. It takes not only from that community, that individual, but it robs all of our humanity. Why is it that we have certain pockets within the Quad Cities, in certain neighborhoods that have been impoverished, concentrated poor for decades? For decades, not just 2 or 3 years. Why haven't there been change? Are we just saying that that problem is theirs in that neighborhood, that they don't do well enough? When you drive by, you see no grocery stores, you see no banking institutions. All you have is predatory lending companies that can charge people almost 300% interest, that 85% of their loans are revolving loans, meaning they only have 15% new loans a year. Once you get into the trap, you're stuck, you're spent out, and you are empty, and you keep showing up because you don't know another way out. People say, well, why do they keep going to them? When that's the only option you have. It's like telling a person that is hungry and all they have on the shelf is Spam. Why do they only eat Spam? It's not good for them because there are no options.
Well, and you pointed out the reoccurring as well, because there's people that are at the line, they get ahead, mm-hmm. and you could be just one layoff notice away from poverty.
Without most of America is there. The data says that most Americans can't afford at any given point a $400 emergency. That's most of America, over 50%. The problem with poverty in the conversation is that everybody thinks we're talking about somebody else. We're talking about the rookie officer that works the swing shifts and has a partner at home trying to take care of 2 or 3 young children and can't work outside the house. We're taking care of them. We're talking about military individuals with a uniform on every day that receive public benefits. We're talking about school teachers. We're talking about clergy. We're talking about people inside of worship centers. We're talking about everyday people. But whenever we bring it up, because there's so much shame, Martin Berg said the principal suffering of the poor is shame and disgrace. So how do you tell somebody that sizes you up based upon what they believe your character should be and your ability to amass enough wealth to take care of your household that I don't have enough?
The other judgment, of course, tends to be geography as well, okay. That oftentimes poverty is an urban problem. Project Now, a three-county area.
Absolutely.
It's Mercer, Henry, and Rock Island County.
Absolutely.
You see plenty of rural, can I say poor, rural poor as well?
Absolutely. So this is the wedge that poverty drives. And the wedge is driven between people, is driven between those of different ethnicities and races, and different geographies. So rural poverty is just as injurious as urban poverty. It may manifest differently. Urban is more concentrated. It is complicated in ways that often has to do with what is divested or not available. Rural poverty is wider. It's not as visible. Well, we drive down urban centers, we drive down certain streets, we'll see people sleeping outside. We'll see the landscape and it looks like everything is falling apart. Rural poverty could mean you drive past a home and you say, oh, that's a nice little home. You walk in, they have no plumbing. You can see through gaps in the roof. I've been in those homes where they've stuffed shower curtains to keep critters out and rain from coming in. Trying to figure out how to keep the house without the wind blowing through it, with blankets and quilts everywhere. It's house poor. It's different, it just shows up. You talk about opportunities. Urban has a few more options when it comes to where a person can work. The more rural you are, you're looking at the largest employer in any 40-minute direction in some of the locations is a super Walmart. Tell me what housing is going to come out there and build new developments. We have housing challenges here in the urban center where we don't have enough housing stock. But who's running out to the rural community? They're depopulating and they're getting older. We're appreciative that people are living longer and they're living longer in their houses. Houses don't turn over as soon. So now when the 26-year-old gets ready to find their first home and make their first major investment, where is it coming from? There's no turnover, there's no stock.
The Rooting Out Poverty Conference that is going to be held, that you're spearheading, in some ways it's always going to be preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. But what do you hope comes out of it? Like you said, you want the discussion, but you also want the action as well.
Sure. Being a person that's familiar with choirs, just a tad bit as a member of the clergy.
Absolutely.
Choirs are designed with diversity and difference in mind because it builds on harmony. You have to have enough different types of voices to make music and melody. So even if we're preaching to the choir, we still have to make sure that we appreciate the differences in the work. We branch out in five categories: housing, healthcare, education, economics, and justice. It's like much like the military. We call ourselves the armed forces, but you got Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, and Coast Guard. But it's the armed forces. Poverty has to be the same way. We all have to sing in the same choir. We all have to sing the same song. We just have to sing our part. And what we use that time is to say, how do we close ranks? What made the war on poverty, or the legislation that came out of the Office of Economic Opportunity, so impactful? After a decade in, you saw the poverty numbers going down tremendously. But look how many organizations: community health care centers, Head Start, Job Corps, Vista. You had all these programs, Upward Bound, and of course, Community Action, which was the tip of the spear to the fight. All of us were working in tandem and alongside of each other. What we're saying here, we need to bring the band back together. And so this is the conference that brings the band back together. We learn insightful information. We share best practices, proven practices. We challenge each other. Are we doing this in the sense that this is our job or this is our calling? Because in this work, this is a higher responsibility to humanity. Nobody comes to us when their life works well. Everybody shows up when it's falling apart. And we got a handful of minutes on that clock to try to fix it as best we can before the end of the day.
And it's also generational, because what you do today sets the pavement for children tomorrow. I mean, Poverty is crushing, of course, for families, but so much for the children, because it's a burden they also carry on for the rest of their life, whether it be financially, but certainly mentally.
So generational poverty is probably one of the hardest realities to turn around. Most of America exists in two categories: crisis poor. These are individuals that were above the federal poverty level, individuals doing somewhat fairly well. And when I say fairly well, I mean they can go to Adventureland or Great America. They're not going to stay a week in a hotel. They may get a overnight and then take all the family to a really good smorgasbord and then try to figure out the bag lunch for the rest of the day. Doing very well until that bottom falls out. Crisis. The two crises that strip us of security in America are separation from a partner, or by death or divorce or single parenting realities. The other one is essentially a health crisis. Costs too much to be well, and it strips people from everything. And I'll be honest with you that if I had to choose from paying a bill or allowing my house to go in foreclosure or allowing my car to be repossessed, if I thought that treatment for cancer would keep my loved one here for another year, you could do all of that. You can ruin my credit. You can drag me down to the lowest rung on the ladder and call me shameful, and I'll still walk my back straight and my head up. People make decisions like that every day because of health realities, trying to keep a loved one here. I talked about this before. A year ago, we saved one individual in our seniors programming $109,000 on one life-saving prescription drug. That's how much it takes to keep some people alive with one drug. So part of this is really understanding how much poverty impacts that idea of those two categories. The other one is the working poor. In America, you could be working 40 hours a week. You can work 50, 60 hours working overtime beside the time, in between the time, trying to find a little bit more time to work and still not have enough. That is America. And so the working poor, crisis poor are different than the generational poor. Generational poor is long-term chronic realities. More often than not, their entire community wherein they live and grew up is just as poor. They've gone through a whole life of living in what James Baldwin called the dim-lit sail of the American dream. And it takes a whole lot. Well, people say, why don't they see more for themselves? Why don't they do more? Well, if you've been reared in a dim-lit cell all your life with your head hanging low because of a low ceiling, and all you have is a portal view of society that is sub-level, watching the feet of everybody else walk to their dreams or hear the dancing on the floor above you when they have accomplishments and celebrations, I think your head would hang low too. If you wake up with lack and go to sleep with it every day, I think your head would hang low too. But if we're able to get them to the balcony of tomorrow's opportunity, get them to another level in life, allow them to stand on the roof, I guarantee you they'll see more. I guarantee you their back will straighten up and their head will lift up. What we see is possible for our life changes our whole perception about our reality that we're dealing with in the current moment. They'll dream again, they'll have a vision for their life, they'll smile more, they'll embrace more, and they'll expect more, just because they see more. And that's what we gotta help. But if you walk in as a child, looking at dilapidated buildings, looking at ruined, empty lots, and then your children walk past those same empty lots, we got places that have had empty lots for 30 years. The same old realities, the same sense of lack, generation after generation experiences, generational poor, and generational poverty has to be one of our number one assignments.
Our thanks to the Reverend Dwight Ford, Executive Director of Project Now. Once again, the second annual Rooting Out Poverty Conference is Thursday, April 18th at the River City Casino Convention Center in Davenport. Lojo Russo has some performances booked on stages far from the cities in April, including gigs in Utica, Illinois, and in Ames and Mason City, Iowa. We caught up with her, though, when she played one of her originals at the Black Box Theater in Moline. That's where she took to the stage to play Restless Soul.
There's a sign down on Main Street, attracts me like a moth to a flame. Illuminating words, saying thank you, please come back again. It reminds my restless soul, I've been here too long, without a word or a whisper. Going, going, gone. There's a girl back in Boston remembers better me. When I took everything for granted and gave it all away for free. It reminds me of a time when I thought I could do no wrong. And like a fading photograph, it's going, going, gone. You stand face to face with the weight of it all. Your heart hits a wall. There's a side to the story the truth, and the side where no one gets hurt. I'm reminded that history is written by those who are strong, and like pages torn and tattered, going, going, gone. I'm gone.
Lodrio Russo and Restless Soul performed at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
There's a sign up ahead telling me it's time to come home.
Whelan Presley and Van Ho Funeral Homes have been serving Quad City families and veterans for over 100 years. Whelan Presley is located in Rock Island, Milan, Reynolds, and Van Ho in East Moline, proudly supporting WQPT.